You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. After 8 o'clock here on a Wednesday, hump day. Mike McNamara with you. Hour 2 starts. Joining me is William Constantini. He from upstate New York and currently a Florida resident. He's from upstate Florida now. And so seems like an upstate guy. Will, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm grand.
It's good to hear that. I'm gonna blame you for this whole barracks. Like, this is where we live. You can't inspect it. Don't come up here. We don't want you here. I want my posters. We'll put our room together the way we want it. So because you were working in the ACMAC's office at that time, where were you?
So the counter argument to that is, the first unit I joined was Lima Company 3-8 at Camp Geiger in Camp Lejeune.
Right.
One of the last units in CONUS to live in squad bays.
Who was?
So the idea that I was driving towards individual dormitories for Marines, I think, would not withstand any bit of critical thinking.
Okay. Who said we're gonna do critical thinking? Okay. When somebody gets blamed, this is my standard. We're all standing around. Stonewall Jackson comes riding up. We don't know who he is. We shoot. One of us hits him, and now there's silence. And I look around and think, I'm not getting blamed for this. And I yell out, Costantini, what the hell did you just do? Now, there's nothing you can do because everybody's going to say, look, I don't know what happened, but some guy named Constantini just shot Stonewall Jackson. So the facts be damned, okay? The facts be damned.
I don't know that policy came out. If you think about it, when we came back from the war in 2003.
Right.
All of a sudden, we had more units at home station than we'd ever had before. And most of those, I'm talking on the infantry side.
Right.
You know, most of those regimental areas, particularly in Camp Pendleton and I think in Hawaii, not quite so sure at Camp Lejeune, but I think so. You know, they were built to have a unit deployed all the time. So a regimental area would have three barracks and have four battalions very often. And so we were stuffed to the gills, and we underwent, I think we had just started a process to be building some more barracks, because I think we opened some of those mid to late 2000s in Camp Pendleton in particular. And so the MILCOM that went through got designed in a, I think they called it 2x2, two Marines on one side, two on the other side with a shared head in the middle. And I don't think that anyone ever thought about how does this impact cohesion of the unit? How does this contribute to good order, morale, and discipline of the organization? And then I think this idea, as we were, units were rotating back, and we got into that 7-7-7, where seven over, seven home, seven back, and everyone's busy, and we started hearing things about, well, we don't know how to do garrison leadership, and so maybe we, you know, internal to the force and culturally, we sort of got over the idea that everything you do contributes or detracts from the good order, morale, and discipline of your unit. And look, we had things go on in Iraq where bad things happened, and unit leaders, when questioned about why those bad things happened and why they didn't figure it out themselves, said, well, you know, I didn't want my Marines to think I was second guessing.
Yeah. Come on.
Hey, pal.
Part of the gig.
You actually don't have that luxury. You have to develop the relationship that you can look people in the eye and ask them hard questions. Hard questions about why did you shoot, not shoot, or why can't you seem to keep Marines in your barracks within the company SOP, battalion SOP? Why can't we maintain proper living standards? And look, think about it. Why do people join the Marine Corps? You know, I used to ask Marines, close your eyes and give me three reasons you joined the Marine Corps. And I'd say, everyone who said challenge, raise your hand. That's one of every Marine's three reasons, challenge. So we build a barracks that we actually is a dorm because, well, you know, it's really tough life. Come on.
That's what I want to talk about because, and that's what I want to blame you for because you were working somewhere, someplace at the time, so you're going to get blamed. But I remember hearing that, oh, no, so we don't do that anymore. That's where they live. And I said, yeah, they've always lived there. Okay, so who's supposed to be inspecting it? Well, sir, that's their private place. We don't go out in town and inspect, so really we don't kind of look at it like that anymore. I said, whose idea is that? I'll tell you what, that's a great way. Who signed up to join the Marine Corps that said, yeah, I really want to stay the way I am. I'll go through boot camp, but then I kind of want to return back to the slimy way that I used to live where there's not real standards that I have to meet, but I can just kind of backslide into the scumbag civilianness that I used to live in. Did anybody say that? No, the answer is no.
Yeah, no. I think it was pure inertia. As you had 1,013 things to do to get to recover and then get ready to go again, I'm not sure that. I mean, what are the lessons learned of the last 15 years? We have no idea. Yeah. We keep making it up as we go along. We have not.
Yeah, no. I have an idea. It's easy. There's two lessons. One, discipline works. Two, discipline is a function of leadership. If you stick to those two lessons, then it all works. If you get away from that.
How do you operationalize that? How have we fundamentally committed to that? And I'm not here to take pot shots at the commandant and the current leadership because, again, I worked in those offices and it's a mile a minute.
Right.
But get on Marines.mil and look at the current Marine admins and the current OMARs. It's a freaking pig's breakfast of stupidity that are all priorities, and there's no common thread that says discipline leads to success in combat, and here's what we mean by discipline. And discipline is the Lejeune leadership method, father, son, teacher, scholar, right? The greatest officer I served with is now the chairman. All you had to be concerned is that he would be slightly disappointed with you. I was concerned that people in that office would go out and commit ritual seppuku because they disappointed the general.
Right.
That was discipline. That was discipline at its highest form, that people wanted to excel because they were committed to the organization.
Okay, so let's talk about discipline. Let's talk about discipline at lower discipline at lower forms. How the rest of us have to practice it in the Marine Corps because, you know, he's an anomaly. I don't know. Okay, so to me, there's been timeless things that I walked into as a lieutenant. Well, first of all, I walked into him as a candidate. I walked into them as a lieutenant, and I learned them. And it was the way the Marine Corps had gone to war and what had been successful in the Marine Corps. Now, I was a product. I grew up in the 60s. I was a teenager in the 70s. So it's not like I embraced Marine Corps values when I was young, but I knew that the things that I enjoyed in my life, a lot of them were resident in the Marine Corps, and I was willing to accept that way of life to have access to those things in my life. And I didn't expect the Marine Corps to join me. Now, when I think about that, just my own personal, I hate to use the word journey, my own personal walk down life's trail, when I reflect on that, and then I also look at just the demographics of the Marine Corps. What, 60% under the age of 26? And and we turn over 35,000 bodies a year. So 100 of the 180 odd thousand will turn over every 3 years. To me, that lends itself to more structure, not less. And if you loosen that structure with a force that young, then you get what you get. And I don't know why that's so hard. And you're not talking about being a bad guy. For instance, field day. Field day. What is field day? Are we going to go out and play games? No. Everything gets cleaned. All right? Down to the paint.
It's interesting. You remember General Mundy?
Yes, I do.
Talking about we don't want to necessarily recruit married civilians to be Marines. And just got excoriated by Representative Schroeder and in the media. The Commandant says we're not going to exclude them, but we shouldn't go looking for them. Because in a force of that age and the deployment, and look, the deployment cycle during the war only slightly ramped up from the deployment cycle that I went through as a platoon commander and company commander. I mean, you're gone 50-odd% of the time. And the cohesion gained by being a unit that is there together. Look, having married PSCs is challenging,
right,
to that. And the Commandant recognized that and got kicked in the shins over it. And I don't know. Again, General Mundy was a great man. It's not for me to criticize him. He was absolutely right, though.
Yeah, but
we shouldn't be looking.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. When you get to that level, if you're afraid to tell the truth, then to me you don't belong there. You don't belong there. And look, what else are you campaigning for? You know, at that point you need to. And if people don't like it, then so be it. But his point is a valid point. And that look, you know, the divorce rate among young married people in the Marine Corps is incredible. Right, and it takes a special kind of couple to weather that, and when you put that kind of stress on a young marriage with young people, they're not fully formed, and so the odds are stacked against them. Is that a difficult point, you know, to understand? The answer is hell no, it's not. Right, we know because we've lived it. All right, and maybe they would stay married if they didn't go down this trail. So, but again, my point is, if you're afraid to tell the truth, and I know you're burning it down like this, then you don't belong. So I mean, God bless General Mundy for just speaking the truth. And this whole term "truth to power" is very vogue around the Beltway. I don't see I don't see it so much.
No, look, yeah, I mean, it's laughable when everyone's speaking truth to power. Let's be careful.
Yeah.
You know, that's people who start a conversation where they think we can all agree. Actually, not. If we can all agree on something, it's probably danger heading our way.
Here's the other one they start with. I'm not the brightest guy in here. No. I'm just an average guy. And I normally interrupt that with, just stop. If you were an average guy, you wouldn't be saying that. You'd be sitting against the wall, not running your suck, okay? Afraid that you were going to show your ass in front of a bunch of other guys. So don't sandbag me, okay? I don't like it. who's that? Like, what? Why is he here? Yeah, the whole concept of truth to power. The Marine Corps could have used a big dose of truth from a general officer who came back in 2004, 2005, 2006 and said, we don't have enough guys there. Everybody, we do not have enough guys there. I don't care what Mr. Wolfowitz says. I don't care what Mr. Rumsfeld says. I really don't care what Mr. Rumsfeld says. Okay? In fact, I want to fight that guy on the steps of the Capitol. That's right. I'm quitting today. Hey, Mr. Rumsfeld, I call you out 4 o'clock on the steps of the Capitol, right? You and me, because I don't want a piece of your ass. But again,
let's go back to small units and discipline. And so, I will say, I'm thinking about time in Iraq and a lot of really, really good things that you saw. And then some other things that should cause concern. I mean, we had negligent discharges all over the division, fairly routinely, I hate to say. On the other side, you saw Marines embrace the role of what they were doing, and the highest morale in the force was in the units that were the closest to the fight,
right.
Which also tells us something that people sign up for a reason and they want to be there. And so that maybe the best form of discipline is to give people the Marine Corps that they expected to join. And they expected it to be, hard-nosed and fit. And I'm going to genuinely learn how to shoot this gun and it's going to be Spartan. And I'm going to be challenged. And I go back to my challenge analogy. Everyone says they want to be challenged until the challenge punches them in the nose. Well, that's not the challenge I wanted. But in the end, look, when you went to cold weather training and you came back, the sense of esprit within that unit was off the charts because Mother Nature knows how to challenge you. And if you ever did a genuine 25 miler, and got your unit, whether that was your squad or your battalion, all the way to the end of it, people's feet were bleeding and, some people had to have that, core temperature reading taken on the side of the road, et cetera.
Nice.
But the morale of overcoming that challenge, because that's why they joined.
Right.
If you would have told them that morning, hey, do you really want to go on the 25 mile? No one will know if you don't go, right? There's no, a bunch of, I'm not sure I want to do the 25 miler, but that's why they joined. And did they join to live in a 2x2 private apartment? Right? If you give it to them, they're going to take it, right?
Right.
But if you give them that other Spartan existence that has purpose, and I'm not talking about just messing with people.
No.
But if you can translate and give them, look, my first battalion commander was a guy named Dave Bice, who is a very, very hard-nosed guy. And he was a bit of a psychopath on sort of this idea. He never really said it that way, but he wanted people to be training. And I didn't go on a journey like you. I grew up in New York or California. But I learned a lot and matured. I matured a lot as a lieutenant, as a captain. Hopefully the maturation process slowed down a little bit after that. But seeing that guy's dedication, he didn't always communicate it in the best way. And I thought he was a little bit crazy at times, and I probably took some of the stuff he taught me when I was a battalion commander. Yeah, but that was it. Give them the Marine Corps they expect. So you don't want people posting naked pictures of other Marines on Facebook? Give them the Marine Corps they expect. Right?
They're worn out
and invigorated.
I don't see...
And that's discipline.
I see a logical link, and I'll take this back to child raising. One of the worst things that happens to a kid... And I say this from a perspective as a kid. My life was simple. I grew up, I went to Catholic schools, right? So my mom, we lived, I don't know, 3 miles or so. I started riding my bike when I was in sixth grade, but my mom didn't trust me that I would get to school if she let me ride my bike in kindergarten and whatnot. Anyway, so my sisters and I, we're in a carpool. So we put on our uniforms, we go to school. The nuns have custody of us for that period of time. I played sports. We had a very good sports program. Most of the guys who coached me were veterans from World War II or Korea. All right. We had water discipline during football practice. Okay. And so that's the world I grew up in. There was no deviation from it. The same rules at school were the same rules that I had at home. And there was no way to arbitrage that. You know, there wasn't, this is good over here and this is good over here. I had friends, though, that they didn't live that way. When they figured out that the standards at home didn't apply at school and they could say what they wanted, their life took a turn. They could arbitrage their behavior. They could do this over here, but not this over here. And it sent them down a bad road. And I think the Marine Corps messes with that when you don't give them the structure that they need. We don't need more of the undisciplined, I do what I want, when I want, I'm waiting for somebody to knock on the door and invite me to be a video game tester and pay me $130,000. We don't need that in the Marine Corps. They don't want that. They join us because the change is forever. But it seems like we're uncomfortable with that. And guys like you who want to, like, turn it into dormitories, I don't know why you would do that, but guys like you. Because, so to me, now I go through the crucible. I get handed this Eagle Globe and Anchor. One of the great days of my life. Maybe, other than family issues, maybe the greatest day of my life because I've had to struggle to do this. Now I go to the barracks and I find out, well, man, a lot of the stuff I used to do as a civilian, I can still do. Because, man, this is a dormitory. This is not a barracks. This is cool. And I backslide. And my behavior backslides. And then it's like, and, you know, and I see a direct corollary between that kind of lack of standard and us being afraid to say it is what it is. It ain't for everybody. Right? You joined us.
You know,
we didn't join you.
I think it would be interesting to look at MARSOC versus, you know, the regular infantry battalions out there. MARSOC is senior, right? So it's not an apples and apples
comparison.
But I sense that a lot more, that MARSOC is a lot more of the Marine Corps that people thought they were going to join.
Why?
Standards are obvious and the, you know, breaking a standard, the consequences are probably a lot closer to you. I mean, they operate as small units, all alone and unafraid. I think we take a lot more risk in those organizations than we do in other places. And so it's obvious to people why the standard is in place that way. And look, they're more mature.
Right.
And so, how do you, so what's the future of warfare? Is the future of warfare more of this distributed operation, small unit, et cetera? Well, if that's the case, then the Marine Corps needs to be more like MARSOC per se. So how do you do that with entry level, 18 and 19 year olds and I want people that can improvise, that do understand instantaneous response to orders, but also are genuine professionals. And it's hard to do in 13 weeks of boot camp and whatever 40 or 50 days of ITS, or SOI, excuse me. But is that a model that we have in front of us? Of what is true discipline. And, I mean, I'm sure that their barracks are just like everyone else's. And so maybe the barracks becomes a non-issue if you integrate this idea of being a professional and there's an expectation across the board. Okay, so what's the shortfall? It's in small unit leadership.
Right.
It's in small unit leadership. And so as a field grade officer in particular, how do you first liberate your small unit leaders to do what they know? They know what to do. But how do you liberate them to do it? And then how do you convince them, perhaps in a less liberal way, to do it? And that's the challenge of that field grade leadership within an infantry battalion, or probably within any
unit,
right. Battalion squadron size organization. But that's why you're there. Dave Bice was not really concerned whether I liked him or not. I was just
Nor was my mom. Kathleen didn't care.
Yeah.
She would look at me. She it didn't dawn on me until I was like 17 that like, what do you mean you don't have to do that? Like, Kathleen's like gonna kill me if I. And I had that in my head. She instilled that in me, that I would pay.
Oh.
You will pay. I will find out, and you will pay, Michael. Yeah. And she and I knew with certainty I would pay. And so as a result, I stayed out of stupid stuff as a kid. Like, nah, man.
Yeah, but Mike, I mean, I got to tell you, think of when we went to the basic school. So I was a first lieutenant.
Right.
When I joined that staff there, and I'd come out of a pretty hard-nosed infantry battalion. Future General Bice and General Blackman were my battalion commanders, and the rifle company I was in was pretty basic. And the idea of brilliance in the basics, hadn't heard the term until much later in my life. But we didn't do a lot of esoteric stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We were fit. We knew how to hump. We shot a lot of ammunition. We put about 6 staff sergeants out of that company right out of the Marine Corps because they couldn't hang. And the people that put them out was a company guy and the first sergeant.
Right.
So it was pretty basic. And I went to the basic school and looked at our peer group of captains and first lieutenants and sort of what they thought was how you did training. And it was mystifying to me what units they could have possibly been in. So there's a wide and I don't know if I made Lima Company 3-8 any better or not. I know that Lima Company 3-8 made me a lot better.
Right.
A lot better. And again, I grew up a lot when I was there. Some people say probably not enough, but I grew up a lot when I was there. But the staff of the basic school, we went and figured all those guys were the same age for the most part.
Right.
All Gary's junior captains, few of them had commanded companies by that time, 4 to 6 years in, and the disparity. And so now you're training lieutenants, with that disparity. So the Marine Corps philosophy is not being pushed through at the first and fundamental PME school of officership.
Right.
I remember
this, you get these guys would come through and they talk to you as a staff and things like that. And they would say, hey, look, I just need a lieutenant who can execute. I don't need Clausewitz, okay? Stop sending me Clausewitz. Well, the truth is, you actually need a lieutenant that can, he's got to do both. He's got to be able to think, and we can ridicule Clausewitz, but you got to plant those seeds. It's not the skip and go naked crew. He's got to be able to deliver. He's got to be able to do the tech. It's not an either or proposition. And that's as you got around, the hard guys, and most of the guys who we worked for, they were Vietnam era Marines. They had been to Vietnam. They were no bullshit, And we talk about, the numbers of KIAs we had. When there's 58,000 killed in a war, and you talk about battles, General Lynch was on talking about medevacing 158 guys out of an LZ that they got inserted to that the NVA had registered and were waiting for. He talks about Colonel Barrow, his regimental commander, flying in. And General Ray Davis flying in the next morning, walking up and saying, hey, what do you need from me? Men, that had known big time fights. When those guys are Marty, my regimental commander was Marty Brantner, who just passed away, God bless him. But he had 2/3 of his right calf shot off winning the Navy Cross. And Marty Brett used to hobble around Camp Margarita every day, and we'd look at him and go, that dude's hard, you know. And so when you got after field day, there was no bullshit about, no, the room looked like this, the field day better be right, you know, you better walk through because the company commander's going to walk through, and if it ain't right, somebody's going to pay. It was simple. It wasn't that complex. And it lent itself to a hardness and discipline that had been the hallmark of the Marine Corps for decades. And so I don't know if we've gotten too smart for that. I don't know if we've gotten too sensitive for that. But look, all the diversity in the world fits into that, right? All the gender issues fits into that. A hard simplicity of respect, hard work. And if you can't cut it, then get out of here. We don't need you. And we can do more with less.
Yeah.
We don't need the jackass strap hangers that make our lives more difficult. But I don't know.
And can you convert that into just being so routine that people don't even notice it so that they can use their brain power on other things? I mean, I think back to General Van Riper, and so I just missed this. He had been the regimental commander at, I guess it was 4th Marines? Yeah, 4th
yeah.
Marines at Camp Schwab.
Right.
And so I got to Schwab in 1987. He'd just gone up to be the chief of staff. And what he was known for is walking out of his CP, which was halfway up the hill from all the barracks, and stopping rifle companies that were humping out to the field, out to CTA. And he'd turn around 90-something percent of them because they weren't ready to go to the field.
Right.
They didn't have their gear. And so he was communicating a certain fundamental. And unfortunately, the message didn't really get through.
No, the madness. The madness is what got through.
Yeah. And so how do you get that fundamentally through? And I'll tell you something. It was a hell of a lot easier as a battalion commander to get that through in Iraq than it was any other time in my life. You know, you're an LAV guy. That's a pejorative, by the way. But we had some simple rules. You know, there's a laminated piece of paper on the back door of your LAV that had all your serialized and sensitive equipment. And someone in that vehicle is responsible to lay their eyes on all the serialized and sensitive equipment before sundown, and right after sunup. Because if we lost something, I wanted to know within 12 hours. And so there's a staff sergeant on my vehicle, Staff Sergeant Avila, now Master Gunnery Sergeant, great man. He used to come up, and I had to show him my pistol and my rifle and my NVGs. Those are basics. Those are fundamental. Those are discipline. And it was easy to do. And people in First LAR knew when the battalion commander showed up, I was going to flip open your back. Patch. I was going to look at your laminated sheet, and I was going to see when was the last time someone initialed that they had inspected the serialized and sensitive equipment. It's a fundamental. It was easy. You know, those kinds of things, because it was translatable. People understood, hey, if you don't have an NVG, you might not be able to do your mission, kind of a thing. And even with that, you know, we screwed stuff up.
But that's okay.
But how do you
that's
translate?
Okay. Yeah. I'm with you.
How do you translate those little procedures and those little disciplines? Hey, look, again, you're an LAV guy. I never had a problem with people doing vehicle PMs in Iraq. Because it was obvious if you didn't do your PM and you ran out of water or your planetary went bad or you blew a head gasket, you're going to be on the side of the road. It's 115 degrees and you're in grave danger.
Right.
And so I never had a problem with people peeing in vehicles. Now, you know, here's an interesting story. I got home and ended up in D.C., you know, the next year, and I went to the hospital and visited a Marine from 1st LAR who had blown a leg off because they had delinked their 25-millimeter. Wiped down all the ammunition, and then as they were relinking it, he couldn't get a link in, so he hit it with a hammer. And it blew up and blew his leg off. And I didn't know him. He hadn't deployed with me, so he joined later. And I got to talking to him, and I remembered who his platoon sergeant was. And his platoon sergeant was not very good. And I knew that at the time. And so a simple point of supervision, you're doing the right thing, right? Clean the ammunition, clean your feed trays, do all that kind of stuff. But you're not, you've got a bit of a cowboy attitude and not a fundamentally disciplined, organized force. That blows his leg off. Almost both. I mean, screwed him up. And there's nothing, well, there's a lot of things worse, I guess. But I'll tell you, it's a bad thing when you're in Bethesda missing a leg and there's no purple heart. Because you did it to yourself. There's the mental issues there.
You know, one of the things that we were talking on this, the subject of discipline came up, and it always seems to come up, but it came up recently, and then Mike Musselman came on afterwards, and I said, you know, how long would it take you to see when you got someplace, you know, discipline or not? He said, oh, my God. He said, from the start, you know, 2 minutes maybe it would take. You know, all you had to do is, you know, get out of your vehicle and walk around, and you would see state of cleanliness, how they greet, how you're greeted, their uniforms, all the things that we talk about. And I said, when you saw that, when you saw a unit that wasn't disciplined, what did you feel? He said, sadness. I said, why? And
yeah.
He said, because I knew that some of these guys were going to die that didn't need to die. And the reason they were going to die is because that's how it is in combat. If you're not disciplined, you're going to pay.
Yeah, so Mac, let me, you know, here's a, you know, self-criticism. So I joined a division in Baghdad after the march up, and like a week later we went down to Diwania. And we moved into a camp that had unexploded ordnance in it. There were some low-slung buildings there. People were pitching their tents on the top of the building. We built trash pits at the corner of every, the four corners of the division area. Okay. Of the headquarters battalion area, and we burned our trash after sundown. And so I think to myself, I mean, I was new. I hadn't been through the war with these guys. I've been there, you know, a week in Baghdad. And so we set up a camp that's littered with unexploded ordnance. And then we allowed Marines to pitch their tents wherever the hell they wanted to, include on the roof of buildings. No shit. Flat-top buildings, people pitching their tents and sleeping in them at night. And then we burn our trash after dark. I don't call those trash pits. I call them target reference points for anyone. And, yeah, I was a freaking lieutenant colonel selected to be the CEO of 1st LAR, and I took command 6 weeks later when we went home. I didn't go to the headquarters battalion commander and say, hey, sir, you know, you're a fucking soup sandwich. This is one of the most ill-disciplined camps I've ever seen in my life.
Let me ask you about that. Is the reason that you didn't go because you were simply ignorant or you lacked moral courage?
No, I saw the whole thing. I wasn't part of the team though. I had joined after the war. And look, the division, when I joined the division, okay, I get being filthy because I was filthy a lot a year later.
Right.
But it was beyond filthy. You know, people, you think of all the great Marines you knew who were Vietnam veterans. Right. And then you think of what the Marine Corps was in Vietnam and how many people are dead because it was ill-disciplined in many ways. And how do you recognize ill-discipline? Something as simple as writing on a helmet cone. That's not yours. That's mine. You don't write shit on there.
Right.
And the vehicles, the way they were decorated. And I use the word decorated, another pejorative. But all that shit was going on in 1st Marine Division. And General Mattis recognized it. And so when we got to Diwania, he was attempting to snap it back. But it had been allowed to degrade.
Right.
And then it had to get snapped back. And it was something I took away. When 1st LAR went home, there was no sense. When the division went home, there was no sense we were going back. Right? But then we did. And there were some of those things I took. And there's no such thing as being outside without a cover-up. And it's not that you need a cover to have a complete uniform, it's because your cover protects your head from the sun, and the sun will kill you. There's no being out there without your sleeves down. I don't care about your tan. Oh, it's hot. Yeah, you ever see an Arab running around naked? Never.
Right.
You're covered. It protects you. Vehicles were very clear how we were going to mark our vehicles, and then there was no discretion. And those were the simple things that set a certain tone. In some ways, what do I know? They thought I was the freaking Van Riper first LAR, but in a different sort of way. General Van Riper had to do that in a peacetime environment at Camp Schwab, et cetera. And again, the messaging wasn't always crystal clear to me. I hope my messaging was a little bit different, that these are the fundamentals that demonstrate to me discipline. And you know what? We were still a soup sandwich on any given day. And there was plenty of activity for sergeant majors and first sergeants and battalion commanders and platoon commanders and platoon sergeants to snap people back. But I think it was easier in that environment. I hope it was easier for my subordinates because I hope my expectations were clear. And there's a very straight line between ill discipline and poor performance. Hey, sleep. Right?
Okay, hold on. I gotta take a break. When we come back, we're gonna talk sleep. Because again, I don't think in order to be successful as a civilian, it's the same. You have to live the same life. It's not gonna be Marine Corps style, certainly. But if you don't embrace being a disciplined, small group business, then you can't be successful. As much as our culture hates the D word, the path to success goes right between the space and the inside of the capital D. You can't get to be successful without going through that little hole. It's just a fact of life. And I don't care how much you want to skip and go naked. If you're not disciplined, you can't sustain success. You can accidentally happenstance into it. You can't sustain it. So I want to talk about that when we come back. Constantini joins us here. On a, we're talking discipline, one of our favorite subjects. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel
alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
This is U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran Montel Williams. During my 22 years of military service, I had the honor of working beside many brave service women. They are the fastest growing population of veterans, and they can be a great asset to your company. Women veterans are trained to take initiative, adapt to change, and they're quick to learn. If you're an employer or a woman veteran, call the U.S. Department of Labor at 866-487-2365 or visit careeronestop.org.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place!
There's some awesome lines in that movie. There is, and that is certainly one of them. We continue hour two on a Wednesday. Mike McNamara joined by retired Marine Colonel Will Cosentini, and we're talking about discipline. Talk about sleep. You know, all these things are just different versions of the same subject, right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting sleep. So I really learned a lot about sleep when I was in 2-6, and John Allen was our battalion commander, and we had a symposium on sort of human factors in combat. And he brought some people in. We really talked about sleep, and it made me think about it a lot. And it, you know, it's one of the most important things that you got as a leader that's going to impact performance. And, you know, so I had rules as a battalion commander about drivers. And if a driver had to take a security shift, it was going to be a first shift so that they got continuous sleep before they went. And it was pretty clear to everyone, and I attempted to give people sort of parameters on how to do it. And we had to do a battalion move one time, and we were still using Humvees at the time, so it was quite early in the deployment. And had a Humvee crash and flipped over, and a couple guys in the back, and they just got bumps and bruises, and the driver ended up breaking his leg. We had a medevac, and we were way out there. I don't know if you remember Route Silver. It was between like KV and Elkhart, sort of way out west.
Yeah, which is like you're not on the edge of the planet, but you could see the edge from there.
You could see it, right? Yeah. So it was a pain in the ass medevac, and I forget where we were going. And so we got everyone in, the other thing we did investigations in 72 hours out there.
Wow.
Right? An investigation takes as long as it takes, right? So in a peacetime environment, it takes 6 months. 72 hours. Because we got to move on.
Right.
And so I just asked, hey, you know, what happened? How did you crash your vehicle? And someone said, well, the driver fell asleep. I said, that's impossible. That's impossible. Because the driver had X number of hours of continuous sleep. And my XO heard me, and he said, I'll do the investigation. And sure as shit, we had very clear policy, thoughtful policy to ensure that we didn't screw this up. And the individual Marine was a sergeant, and his leader did not necessarily follow the policy. And so the guy fell asleep at the wheel. And so he suffered from, broke his leg. He just could have killed two Marines in the back of that. And I'll tell you,
it's a miracle. It's a miracle that he didn't.
Yeah, and for me, those are the things that drove me to insanity. Look, the enemy gets a vote, so So if there's shooting going on and things get random and Marines get hurt, I never liked it, right? But the enemy gets a vote. But when you do something like that where you know what to do, you establish how you're going to do it, you think you have a command climate that supports people doing the right thing, and then through a fundamental lack of discipline by the individual who has responsibility and his first unit leader, you fail. That drove me to insanity because you have a personal responsibility, and that you think you've mastered this, as well, and you haven't mastered it. And so small unit discipline, you're never going to master it. But it's absolutely critical. That could have led to the failure of a complete, mission set right there. And so, I think.
Let me ask you, what did you do with the vehicle? You're out in the middle of nowhere. You got to take it with you. Was it drivable?
The beauty of LAR is that you can put a tow bar in anything and take it with you.
Okay, so you could tow it. I mean, sometimes when after
wreck
them.
Humvee.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah.
But that. I guess the moral of the story is that, yeah, these things are critical, and again, in that environment, you think there's a very straight line. Oh, right. The tank commander is actually not a nut. He actually is thinking that we want to have people who have responsibility to be able to operate safely, et cetera, and that's why, and you still can't get it done sometimes. And so, look, every unit is going to have failures, are they systemic or not? And I, on the grand scheme of things, we do get a whole lot right in the Marine Corps. But we can't use that as an excuse. If we fundamentally believe that small unit performance, that you can aggregate small unit performance in a big unit success, I think we believe that. And I think we believe that in the future, distributed operations, small units, et cetera, then how are we building those small unit members and those small unit leaders to be those people who can be in that moment and solve it? And, you know, I had the opportunity late in life to talk to midshipmen and officer candidates and very, very junior officers. And one of the things I told them is that, you know, I didn't know it in the 80s when I got commissioned, but I had time to grow up. I really did. But from 2002 to, I don't know, maybe 2017, you don't have time to grow up. And we as an institution need to accelerate that journey that you and I took over the course of many years and get it so that those units are going to perform, because otherwise we just pay the price at the small unit level. For an individual Marine's family, the price to an individual Marine's family for an ill-disciplined unit, catastrophic, unrecoverable. So
let me read you an email. Interesting discussion this morning, Mac. Question. I heard the term distributed ops, and I think we all know that the future holds more distributed ops as the battlefield gets more and more lethal, as technology is disseminated around the world, everything from drones to unmanned vehicles to robots with machine guns. We will not be the only nation that has those things. So in the future, distributed ops is certainly a requirement. My question is this: how do you do distributed ops without strong, small unit discipline leadership?
Yeah, absolutely right. Because distributed ops, more risk requires greater discipline, small units. So I knew in First LAR, and we were pretty damn distributed at times. Platoons 50 miles away from their company commander, companies 150 miles away. From a battalion commander. There were some platoons I did not allow out of sight of their company commander, and I told the company commanders because I didn't trust the lieutenant or the staff sergeant in that platoon. I didn't have many, but I had a couple. I wasn't going to allow them to do that because I was not convinced that they were disciplined and could operate without that direct supervision. Well, in the future, you're not going to have the luxury because it ain't going to be platoons doing that. It's going to be squad reinforced
right.
out there. We build in sergeants. It was a great fear. General Dunford had a great brief. It was, it basically came down to how do you get experienced sergeants to be squad leaders? And you had to break the manpower paradigm within the Marine Corps. And I want to be careful. You know, we didn't get it done when he was a PPO. We didn't get it done when he was the ACMAC. I don't think we got it done when he was a commandant.
No, when you look at the requirement of like the, you know, the Marine Corps is doing, you know, prototypical experiments. And when you look at what they're attempting to do, you're essentially attempting to make a company a battalion in terms of functionality. You have operations chiefs at the company level. You have robust, reinforced, organic weapons in big squads. It is a more lethal, more capable organization. The question is, you still have, leading those squads, you have relatively junior Marines that don't have, they haven't been to IOC. And so I would tell you.
And look, second lieutenants, I love them, right? God bless them. I utmost respect.
Right.
But I'm the first one to tell you, I had a lot of growing up to do
right.
when I got out there. And so second lieutenants are not. You know, I had second lieutenants do heroic things, and we've, you know, in our history, we've had all that. But
if he's going to be a company commander, if he's going to be a company commander, he's got to be an assistant, you know, so my point is he's going to be, that platoon is going to be essentially functionally a company in terms of robust. He's not able, even, and again, you and I both know, we graduated pretty high quality product from the infantry officer course, but he's not a company commander, right?
No.
And so to me, if the Marine Corps strays from leadership, I think it's the bedrock of our Corps. We do so at the peril of, I don't, won't say the force. We do so at the peril of the individual, because as you said, the results for families is catastrophic. And I see these signs. If you were, last question, if you were king for a day, give me one thing that you would change in the Marine Corps.
I'll tell you what requires the greatest analysis is manpower. So manpower is 60-odd% of our budget.
Right.
It's the essence of who we are as an organization. And it'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Right?
Right.
Listen, Mac, the best officers we have should be going into manpower. And everyone knows. That's not always the case today. But that's who we are. We're a people organization, 60-odd%. You quoted the stats earlier,
right.
35,000 new accessions every year, complete turnover of the whole organization every 3, 4, 5 years. And we have an archaic industrial age manpower system. And if we're going to reshape the force to be able to develop these small unit leaders to do what we think, then we can't look on the margins of manpower. So
right.
I got a double time late for something.
All right, sir.
I appreciate the conversation.
No, thank you very much. I enjoyed it. Thanks, Will. William Constantini, through the Naval Academy. I didn't even give him shit for that either. It's only about discipline. And it reflects, that manifests, the lack of discipline manifests itself in all kinds of different areas. And so to me, if it has to be dialed back, to me it's simply a return to your values. It's a return to your values, which are their bedrock discipline. Discipline wins in combat. And again, it's not a excuse for stupidity, and it can be when draconian morons are placed in positions that they shouldn't be placed in. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a confident, disciplined organization that when you say move right, it moves right. And the associated things happen when it moves right. All right, the appropriate adjustments are made. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, John Ubaldi is going to join us, retired Marine Corps Master Gunnery Sergeant, and we're going to see what's going on the Ubaldi reports, and we'll do that coming up next right here on a Wednesday edition, Hump Day edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.